Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The school year marks the fourth navigating COVID-19, and a lot has changed since spring of 2020, but challenges continue to evolve. While some resources are expanding, like transitional kindergarten and after-school programs, others are becoming further strained, such as school staff and the overall mental health of students and adults. And these changes can vary from one school district to the next. Diana Lambert is a senior reporter with EdSource and spoke with school districts large and small across California and joins us with the big themes for the 2022-2023 school year. Good morning, Diana. Welcome back.
Good morning, Vicky. Thank you for having me.
So after speaking with districts across the state, from Los Angeles Unified to Oroville, Sac City Unified, even charter schools in the Bay Area, what stands out to you about how districts are approaching this school year?
Well, actually, districts are approaching this school year with a great deal of optimism. They actually think they have a lot more experience dealing with COVID protocols and student behavior this year, and they expect it to be a better year all around for students and teachers.
What are the biggest changes when it comes to COVID protocols?
Mainly that they're going away. I mean, masking has all but gone away. A couple of schools still have it. There's no social distancing. Testing has changed. The state no longer requires students to be tested if they've had close contact with other people who have been infected. And mostly schools are just sending home tests that students can take when COVID levels are high or when they're coming back from a school break.
When it comes to vaccines, are there any mandates for students or staff that you were able to gather from school districts?
No, pretty much every single school district that had a mandatory vaccination requirement has dropped it, or at least has it on hold. I believe at Sac City Unified, it's on hold. And the state overall has decided to put it on hold to at least July of 2023.
What was the rationale from that, especially from the state holding off until 2023?
They've decided they're going to wait till it's fully approved by the FDA before they proceed, and then they'll make a decision at that time.
I would imagine if you were talking to parents, you know, there's still kind of that issue of not being able to make everyone feel comfortable, because I would imagine there are some parents who would prefer masking while others wouldn't.
Absolutely. I mean, there are parents on both sides of this. And in California, a lot of parents would prefer masking so they can send their kids to school with masks, and they are not allowed to be told not to wear them. And students are supposed to treat everyone with respect, no matter whether they mask or don't mask.
We also have another contagious virus. I'm curious what conversations are taking place surrounding monkeypox or mpox for a virus that spreads through close skin-to-skin contact as well as contaminated materials.
Well, they really are concerned about monkeypox, although we know that not many children have had monkeypox, I think less than six. However, it does spread by close contact, and kids do horse around, they do wrestle, they do gymnastics. So they're disinfecting all the mats they use in athletics, and they're just using their regular protocols. Whenever there's an infectious disease, if you see someone with an outbreak, they're to be excluded from school.
Did you talk to an infectious disease physician about monkeypox and their level of concern now that school's going back into session?
I did, and there was a low level of concern, actually. They said teachers shouldn't be concerned, that if schools follow procedures already in place for infectious diseases, that there is no reason to have any extra concern about monkeypox.
I'm also curious about the mental health of students. What are districts going to be doing to put a greater emphasis on mental health this school year?
They said they're going to put even a greater emphasis than last year on social emotional health. And now that the governor has released, I believe it's $4 billion for counselors, they are going to be adding counselors, adding psychologists to their campuses. Is that they said they're really going to focus on social emotional health because now they don't have to focus on COVID so much this year.
Is there still hybrid learning or is it for the most part, everything's back in person?
For the most part, everything is back in person. Yeah.
There's also adults, teachers, and school staff. What about their mental health?
That's a big concern. A lot of teachers last year, I should say a lot, some teachers last year quit because they felt student behavior was so bad. They felt very pressured. They were under a lot of stress. So they quit. So there's a lot of concern about that and adding social emotional supports for teachers. I don't see that that's being widely done yet, but hopefully they'll be added this year.
But there's an awareness of it.
There's definitely an awareness of it.
How are staffing shortages? I mean, that has been a longstanding issue. And what I'm hearing from you is some people actually left their line of work because of the challenges from last year.
They did. And staffing shortages this year, it's not clear yet. We won't see numbers for a while. They seem to be slightly better in the, as far as teachers are concerned. And I think that's just because of ramped up recruitment and a lot of bonuses added and more people going through the teacher preparation program. However, we are having a lot more staffing issues with classified staff, the bus drivers, the paraprofessionals, the different people who help in the school that aren't credentialed teachers.
Yeah, you actually spoke with Oroville about this. How are they navigating a shortage of bus drivers?
They're doing everything they can. They're getting rid of the buses and using vans instead, because you only need a Class B license or Class C license for a van. So they're getting just everyday people to come drive vans to get kids to school. That means like 10 kids in a van instead of 50 or 80.
And that probably has like ripple effects for even just outside of school, but at school activities and athletics as well.
Absolutely. So they've had to cancel a lot of their trips. They weren't able to go to the finals last year because they couldn't get the buses together, or they had to have parents drive. Sorry. But yeah, it really does impact extracurricular activities.
Yeah. There are some new additions and expansion of programs, because there's a record amount of state funding for K-12 education, not to mention some federal COVID relief as well. What are the big expansions and changes in terms of programs offered to students?
Well, universal kindergarten. This is the first year of universal kindergarten, which is the expansion of transitional kindergarten, which means we have more four-year-olds on campuses these days. They're going to start if between September 2nd and February 2nd, if you turn five, you get to go to school now. And in three more years, every four-year-old will be able to go to school.
Have some districts already gotten a head start?
They have.
What have you learned from them?
A lot of school districts are moving ahead with that. They said it's working really well. Parents are really receptive. They just generally have to get the word out to them, and then they come in. So they've expanded greatly. San Diego Unified has expanded greatly. They've been doing this for a while. So, and it's helping schools, because enrollment declines are really hurting schools financially, because you get paid per student for their daily attendance. And now by adding more four-year-olds, this helps them with their funding.
If enrollment has been going down, where are those students going?
A lot of it's just birth rate. Our birth rate's gone down, so naturally it's just going down. Some people are leaving the state. But it's mostly birth rate. Mm.
There's also the expansion of community schools. Can you explain what exactly those will do for the community?
Well, community school is meant to connect families with government and community services, and to offer parents a greater role in governing the school, so they have more input about what programs are going to be going on in the school, and the school boards generally allow them some concessions, some flexibility.
Oh, Diana, your mic went out. We'll get you back in just a second. You are listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with journalist Diana Lambert with EdSource about some of the biggest changes for back to school. Diana spoke with school districts across California, from large ones like Los Angeles Unified to smaller, more rural ones up in Oroville, as well as districts across Sacramento. Diana, do we have you back?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Okay. Getting back to community schools, because this seems like something that is it's a newer endeavor for the state. So what exactly will that accomplish?
Well, community schools, will connect parents with social services, mental health care, anything they may need. So generally, those are in the more lower income neighborhoods. And also allows parents a greater role in governing their schools, so they have more input with the programs that go on in the schools.
So cultivating maybe more of a trusting relationship?
That's exactly the idea.
There's another change as well. Aren't there later start times for some students? Will this potentially complicate or even arguably help the school year? I mean, it seems like that could be a complication.
Yes, it can really be for parents who have, you know, acclimated themselves to getting their kids to school at a certain time. But yeah, it's 8 a.m. for middle school and no earlier than 8:30 a.m. for high school students. The other complication is we have a severe bus driver shortage, and some districts are having a hard time recalculating their bus routes so that they get the kids to school at the right time. And now this complicates things further.
Mm. What was the rationale for later start times for some students?
The rationale are that high school students are greatly sleep deprived. They often can't fall asleep till later at night.
and that getting up too early is bad for them. It's bad for their health. It's bad for their ability to do well in school. Mm.
What's the main message that you're hearing from families this school year?
I think families are optimistic as well. They're just really happy to be back, happy to see things more normal. There's a lot of programming. Some people don't like the early start times. Parents don't like that in general. But mostly they're just really happy to be back in school.
What about from teachers and school staff as well?
Like I said, teachers are optimistic this year. They're hoping this will be a better year for them. They are really concerned last year with student behavior because a lot of students came back to school ill-prepared to be in a classroom environment, and it caused them to be disruptive in class. So this year, it seems that everyone's better acclimated to school. Mm.
Finally, what are you going to be keeping tabs on for the remainder of the school year?
Oh, everything for sure. But we are launching a big literacy program project, and we're looking at reading and how it's taught. So that's really where we're focusing next.
Diana, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Diana Lambert is a senior reporter with EdSource and spoke with school districts large and small across the state and talked to us about the big themes for the 2022-2023 school year. Up next, conservatorships are under increasing scrutiny and spotlight. An ongoing investigation hones in on some of the most vulnerable adults with developmental disabilities. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.